Hey, Western Wisconsin, let's see what we're up to. Time for Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. I'm Al Ross. It's the second show in July. We survived the fourth, most of us. Coming up on today's show, we have four guest segments and a compendium of what's on stage in Western Wisconsin. Stacy Springob is from Spencer, Wisconsin. She attends UW Stout and decided to write and publish a book about never having a boyfriend. Some people might think that's odd for an attractive young lady, but she wants others to know it's okay, and she's doing just fine. Stacy will tell us her story. Another young lady from Barron, Corinne Schultz, began writing a musical when she was 15. Now, 4 years later, the Barron Spotlighters are performing A Guy Named Tom, which includes the music of beloved satirist of a few decades ago, Tom Lehrer. Jim Oliver brings us that report. The Word and Language are back. Joe Salmons and Eric Ramey, UW-Madison English guys. Their book is Wisconsin Talk, Linguistic Diversity in the Badger State. And we'll pick up where we left off a couple weeks ago, relating how we talk, where it comes from, preservation of language, some words you may recognize, and I have a couple of my pet peeves analyzed. But what do you say we smash the champagne bottle on the hull of the July 10th Good Ship Spectrum with this? UW Extension is very good at sending us information on what's going on in their world. One received recently told of an opportunity, old but new, at the Eau Claire County Expo Center. They have a kitchen there, a nice kitchen. But now it's even nicer and the opportunities are more exciting. Since Culinary Arts, Our Arts, Spectrum West, jumped on it and invited Laura Lynn Sandkamp and Hannah Terwilliger, both Vistas, who made it happen, and Karen Blazer, interim expo director, who began the conversation.
The kitchen has always been at the expo center, and you could rent it for if you were having an event.
Okay.
We decided that we have this great kitchen, and we need to expand its usage. We need to get the community aware of what we have there. It was the dream of one of our department heads to do a commercial kitchen, which is a lot of work. Laura Lynn was hired a year ago, and that was one of her projects to assist us with getting this commercial kitchen up and running. And it's for licensed businesses who do the food preparation parts, but it's also for those people who have a garden. You want to do a bunch of canning with your tomatoes. Mm-hmm. You can rent our kitchen. If you're going to have a big party and you don't have the kitchen space to cook your food, you can cook it at our kitchen and take it home and serve it to your guest.
To produce food for public consumption, you need a commercial kitchen, yes, Laura?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
What does that involve? How is that different than my kitchen?
If you want to start a food business and sell food to the general public, aside from a couple of cottage food laws, the vast majority of people need to be licensed.
Okay.
And so that means that all of your food prep needs to take place in a kitchen space that's been inspected by the Eau Claire City County Health Department, and you need to have documentation that your recipe and your procedures have been approved by either the county or the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. You have to follow guidelines, you have to follow regulations, and the commercial kitchen is part of that.
So what did you have to do to the expo kitchen to make it applicable?
Yeah, so before we got started, we had a couple people from the City County Health Department come take a look. We had to install some backsplash material above the countertops and above the sinks that could be easily cleaned. We had to install some new stainless steel countertops, and we purchased some kitchen equipment also that will only be used by kitchen renters. So things like pots and pans and utensils.
The kitchen was pretty much ready to go for a small investment on the part of the county. Mm-hmm. We were able to get the kitchen to the standards to be used for a commercial kitchen.
So did it make sense that this was a VISTA program?
Yes. Laura Lynn has spent a great deal of time getting this project up and going. I never dreamt of the amount of paperwork and rules and regulations and just the different components that were involved in just the approval process. And then what the users have to do themselves, their processes that they have to do.
So I researched different commercial kitchens around the state, what they charge for hourly rental fees, what equipment they generally have, and everything from what their applications look like to what their policies look like, if they require an application fee, just all those different factors I looked at and compared across the state and then came up with a model that was approved by people in charge of the Expo Center.
So we've established what Laura Lynn's specialty is. Hannah, what's yours?
I actually just started as the new AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista is a year-long program, and you're placed with a host organization. So I'll be taking over Laura Lynn's work, and I'll be continuing to promote the commercial kitchen. We're to the point where it's ready to go. We just need some renters to come in, and we want to make sure that it's out there in the community, that there's this great resource for people to use to start their food business, to can a bunch of their products from home. So I'll continue on the great work that Laura Lynn's been doing, along with some other projects as the new AmeriCorps Vista.
You're passing the torch.
I have passed the torch.
You have passed the torch
yes.
already. Okay. People's interest has been piqued. What's the procedure for renting the kitchen? What do they do?
You contact our office. You can contact myself in
the Expo office.
I'm located in the UW Extension office.
Yeah.
There's an application process. They receive an application. There's a number of steps they have to do, and documentation that they have to submit to us showing they have their license,
they're ServSafe certified.
There's a number of things. They send that back to us. Their application is approved or not approved, and if it's not approved, then we tell them what further information we need. Then there is just setting the dates and times that they want to
rent the kitchen. How far ahead should people plan?
We aren't going out more than about 2 weeks for the use of the kitchen, because it has to fit around our other rental events that go on out there.
In the studio with us, that's Karen Blazer. She's interim director at the Eau Claire County Expo Center. Also, Laura Lynn Sandkamp. She's an AmeriCorps Vista. Kind of a lame duck, I guess. And Hannah Terwilliger is also a Vista. So, Karen, tell us more about what's going on at the Expo. Fair coming up?
Yes, the county fair is coming up. That will start July 23rd and goes and will end on July 27th. That's a big event. There's no charge to get in. I think the only charges are if you want to eat, and they have great food out there.
They do.
Friday and Saturday are kids' days, and I think it's 25 cents per activity that the kids want to do.
You have to be kind of proud of the diversity of events you have at the Expo.
We go from weddings to baptisms to graduations to we just had the big Wars bike race at the end of June.
You know, there's been a dog show there.
We have dog shows. Yeah. We have winter storage. When our season is done for outdoor events, take our buildings and we rent for winter storage.
Let's talk about Vista, ladies. Reading up about it, you know, John F. Kennedy started it. It was his idea, I guess. He wasn't able to start it. It began in 65. How did you guys get interested in it? What are your Vista experiences?
I'm Laura Lynn, and I've served as an AmeriCorps Vista for the past year at UW Extension. And the way that I got involved, while I was an undergraduate student at UW Eau Claire, I was involved in an AmeriCorps summer Vista program.
We should point out that it stands for Volunteers in Service to
America.
There we go.
Yep, Vista.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go
ahead. That's okay. So I served as an AmeriCorps with the on-campus Blue Gold Beginnings program, which connects elementary, middle, and high school students who would be first-generation college students with undergraduate students on campus through mentoring and tutoring and different programs. So I worked with them as a summer AmeriCorps, and I also worked with the Boys and Girls Club, too. I was exposed to AmeriCorps, and I knew that it was something that I wanted to possibly pursue after my undergraduate degree. And so I had the opportunity to work for UW Extension in their horticulture department, and so that's what I've been doing. And apart from the commercial kitchen, I also worked on a youth environmental education program called Youth Eco Teams that we taught for 6 weeks with 12 adult volunteers. We wrote and taught the curriculum at the Boys and Girls Club and the Robbins Elementary, teaching kids about ways that they can improve their impact on the environment in the areas of food, waste, water, energy, and consuming.
So that's the rear view mirror look, and now we're looking out the windshield with Hannah.
Well, I'm continuing some of the same programs that Laura Lynn has been working on. So work with the commercial kitchen, also kind of overseeing the youth eco teams. So continuing on doing another program this fall with the same group of volunteers. And then I'm also working on getting a community greenhouse for Eau Claire. We're exploring that option. Eau Claire has a really vibrant and thriving community garden scene. But as everyone knows, we've got really long, cold winters. So finding a
Thanks
place.
Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah. Finding a place where community members can start seeds inside so mm-hmm. they can grow them in their gardens or even, you know, grow some salad greens inside. So that's my, I would say, big project is going to be working to find a feasible partnership and get that kind of moving and seeing if it's something that can work for Eau Claire.
Well, how do people get involved in Vista? How do, if somebody's listening, they say, I want to do that.
Well, Vista's open to anybody, all yeah. ages. Mm-hmm. At my training, there were people, you know, just recent college grads to retired folks who are looking to do it. But mm-hmm. There's programs all across the country. The mission of Vista in AmeriCorps is to alleviate poverty. So it's working on a variety of poverty-related issues to help that in any way. So I know I did all my application and everything online. You can go to the Vista website and you can find programs that interest you. There's a lot of summer programs or a year-long program as well.
I appreciate it, ladies. Karen Blazer, Laura Lynn Sandkamp, Hannah Terwilliger. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The UW Extension office is in Altoona, Wisconsin, reachable by phone at 839-4712 and online at eauclaire.uwex.com. EDU. And you can Google Vista to get the scoop on that. This is Spectrum West. Coming up, the music of satirist Tom Lehrer is refreshed. More on Wisconsin Talk, and she's never had a boyfriend, and she wrote a book about that.
Support for WPR comes from Visit Winona, home of Winona County History Center, with special summer exhibitions including The Art of Fine Furniture 2014. It's the year to discover Winona. VisitWinona.com.
Here's a Spectrum memo. You can take a stroll along the beautiful St. Croix River and Lake Alice at William O'Brien State Park during a Sunday morning coffee walk with a ranger or naturalist, Sunday, July 20th at 9 a.m. Free and open to the public. The St. Croix River Visitor Center has more details. Well, Mr. Jim Oliver, we don't offer knighthood here, so it can't be Sir Jim Oliver, although Mr. is pretty indicative of the respect we have for his contribution. Mr. Jim Oliver is here again this week with a young lady who is reviving something and someone with whom Jim is familiar from his young days. Here he is.
A Guy Named Tom, an original musical written by Barron High School graduate Corinne Schultz, will be staged by the Barron Spotlighters tonight, Thursday, through Saturday at the Barron Area Community Center. Corinne Schultz, who is now a student at UW-Stevens Point, joins us to talk about A Guy Named Tom, her interest in playwriting, and the music of Tom Lehrer. She is joined by Chaz Mayo, who is playing the part of Tom. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Corinne, what led to your interest in Tom Lehrer?
If you'd believe it, it was completely by accident. It was my freshman year of high school. It was a science class. We were learning about the elements. You know, she was introducing the periodic table. And she said, now, if anybody can memorize this song, I'll give you extra credit. So she played Tom Lehrer's The Elements. And so that got me interested in his music because I started listening to it outside of class. And I looked up his other stuff. It just really caught my attention because some of the humor was so, like, inappropriate, and you didn't expect it to come, and then it happened, and it just made you laugh. It was great.
Before we get into the music, give us an idea of the story that you crafted.
The main character, Tom, he finally gets to fulfill his dream of going to Harvard. He's greeted by everyone, and he thinks it's going to be the best year ever. And then his ex-girlfriend, Agnes, shows up. Agnes, what are you doing here? She says, oh, going to college, what does it look like? And in reality, she had followed him to Harvard because even though he had broken up with her, she still thinks they're together. He has to go through the rest of the year trying to decide. Well, there's this other girl. Her name is Bonnie. And Tom meets her. He's interested in her. Agnes finds out. She gets jealous. She tries to sabotage everything. So not only is he dealing with that, he's dealing with all of the other stresses of college.
Now, is this an accurate depiction of his life? Did you make something up?
Well, I took some things from Tom Lehrer. I took the fact that he's Jewish. I'm pretty sure he isn't an observant Jew.
I read that he was now an agnostic atheist, whatever
right.
that means.
Yeah, okay. I modeled, like, how he looks, the glasses, the blazers, just looking like a sharp dude.
Chaz, what do you think about the character of Tom Lehrer? How have you adjusted yourself to his persona?
I'm not sure if it's I just think like him or it's just that I've kind of grown around it. But I really just do see eye to eye with Tom in the script. There are times where people are like telling Tom that he's wrong. And I'm just like, no, he's not.
Corinne, tell us about who the principal characters are.
We have Tom, who's played by Chaz. And then we have one of Tom's friends. His name is Jim, who's played by Reggie Duncan. Okay, I'll just say this at first. All of these people are Tom's friends because they're all, you know, just the principal. They're the people you see throughout the play. So we have Harry, who's played by Connor Mitchell. Marie, played by Erica Scheer. The final of the friends is Louise, who's played by Danielle Felber. Agnes, the crazy ex-girlfriend, is played by Tasha Henk. And Bonnie is played by Amanda Arnold.
Yeah, now, you said you were sort of co-directing?
Right. I'm co-directing with Kathy Flatten.
Okay.
She's there to help a lot with stage presence and positioning.
Now, is there a pretty elaborate set here, or is it mostly set in nightclubs where Tom Lehrer did most of his performance?
No, the sets are moderately elaborate. We have the campus where a quarter of the scenes take place.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, and then we go to Tom's house. We're in the park a couple times, and then we're inside the school. Tom has to go and talk to the dean because there's a mix-up with his schedule. And then there's two pivotal scenes. They take place in a club.
Uh-huh. Well, the play is billed as having adult themes. So is that due to Tom Lehrer's music, or does that carry over into the book as well?
Both.
Both, okay.
it's in both.
Well, in one of his songs, I Got It From Sally. I don't know if that's in the show or not.
No, so I Got It From Agnes.
Yeah, well, it was originally I Got It From Sally, and then it became I Got It From Agnes, which is interesting. You realized he was satirizing every perversion known to mankind without using a single naughty phrase.
Exactly.
Now, I don't know that it was performed anywhere else outside of nightclubs, but I always thought Lehrer songs were funny, a little naughty or borderline bawdy, but never dirty. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's completely right. It depends on what song you're listening to. Because when you take it with I Got It From Agnes, it really is. There is no naughty phrase in that whole thing. Mm-hmm. But because of the way it's sung, you know, you take it the wrong way and you make it funny.
Yeah. Well, you sort of have to have a bit of a dirty mind if you're going to get the gist of it all. Yes. Okay. Well, tell us about some of his songs that made it into the show then.
There's Fight Fiercely Harvard, the school song. It's the opener. It's where everyone is, you know, telling Tom what a joy it is to have him at Harvard.
Fight fiercely, Harvard. Fight, fight, fight. Demonstrate to them our skill. Albeit they possess the might, nonetheless, we have the will. How we will celebrate our victory, we shall invite the whole team up for tea. How jolly! Hurl that spheroid down the field and fight, fight, fight. Fight fiercely, Harvard. Fight, fight, fight. Impress them with our prowess. Do, oh fellows, do not let the crimson down. Be of stout heart and true. Come on, chaps, fight for Harvard's glorious name. Won't it be peachy if we win the game? Oh, goody, let's try not to injure them. But fight, 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 let's not be rough, though. Fight, 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 and do fight fiercely. Fight, fight, fight.
Much of his music was written in the 1950s and 1960s. Fight Fiercely Harvard, which is one of my personal favorites, was written in 1946, and some of the subject matter is connected to that era. So will this be puzzling for audiences from this era? Are they going to get the joke, I guess is what I'm saying.
I feel like the humor that's in the music translates over to the humor of the book. There's a lot of connections that can be made that can be related to stuff that's going on now. I was talking with someone who is going to see the show, and I was telling them what it was about. They had never heard any of the music, but they could completely relate with the story of going someplace, and then a crazy ex-girlfriend follows them and thinks that everything is going to be exactly the same, but it's not. So I think it'll work.
Well, they are Corinne Schultz, who is the playwright of A Guy Named Tom, and Chaz Mayo, who is Tom, in that production at the Barron Spotlighters. Well, were you able to contact Tom Lehrer?
I was. I originally contacted him by mail, asking if I could use his music. He said, you can use it. I don't suggest you do, because of all of the work that goes into writing a script with witty dialogue and memorable characters and smooth transitions, so people aren't just waiting for the next song. And so I kind of took that as, sure, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So I did.
How old were you when you did that?
I wrote to him when I was 16.
Mm.
So
okay.
About 3 years ago.
Ah. Your background in music, when did you get started? What instruments do you play?
I play trumpet, mm-hmm. and I also play piano, mm-hmm. but I play trumpet more than I play piano. Piano was more of just a side thing.
Now, somewhere, someone sent me some information that if you didn't want to practice, I believe this was your mother who said that she'd just threaten you with having to go outside and play.
If you don't practice, you're not allowed to sit inside and read. You can go outside and read, but you have to be outside.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to be outside.
So what? How about the future for you? Are you looking at a future in theater of some sort or music? Or
what? Well, I'd like to continue writing, you mm-hmm. know, scripts and maybe screenplays, mm-hmm. whatever comes.
Now, you're a student at UW Stevens Point.
Mm-hmm.
What is your major there? What?
Psychology.
Psychology.
Yeah.
Hmm. No theater? No.
Nope.
No theater? No, nothing. Okay. Chaz, what are you? What is your musical background?
It's not great. I did band in middle school,
uh-huh.
and I played the French horn in that. Elementary school, I briefly took piano lessons, mm-hmm. and then I've just done musicals at various local theaters.
So you're more of a singer than you are an instrumentalist? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess. I haven't done choir or anything. I just mm-hmm. show, I just come to the set, and they're like, this is a CD of the music. You sing like that, and then I do that.
Oh, an awful lot of great singers have come down that path, so I wouldn't be apologetic about that at all. Well, we've been talking to Corinne Schultz, whose musical play, A Guy Named Tom, will run tonight, Thursday, through Saturday at the Barron Area Community Center. With her has been Chaz Mayo, who plays Tom. For ticket information, use your favorite internet search engine to find Barron Spotlighters, or you can call the Barron Spotlighters at 715-537-9212. Corinne and Chaz, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Oliver. Some Spectrum memoranda. Tuesday Night Blues at Owen Park in Eau Claire, July 15th. It's Howard, Guitar, Lidke, and Blue Max. Music starts at 6:30. Thursday night, July 10th, that's tonight, if you're listening on Thursday, the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire presents The Heart Pills, Heart of the Heart, and Jordan, that's the word. From UW Eau Claire next Monday at Owen Park, music by the fabulous Allison Scott. And Wednesday, you can catch the movie Frozen on the lawn west of the Haas Fine Arts Center. Chill on the Hill at UW River Falls continues Tuesday, July 5th, featuring the Tommy Bentz Band. Thursday night, tonight, July 10th, Memorial Park, Ladysmith. The Music in the Park series presents John Fox and Deja Vu 2.0. You can exercise your right to vote by participating in Sculpture Tour's 2014's People's Choice Award. You can pick up and deposit a ballot in boxes attached to city polls along Eau Claire streets where sculptures are displayed. The voting deadline is September 30th, so you have some time, but don't tarry. Spectrum West continues. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along this week. A pair of weeks ago, we made the introduction of Eric Ramey and Joe Salmons. They're professors at UW-Madison, and they study, then teach, the way people talk, the origins of those ways, and so many other facets of language and linguistics. Along with Tom Purnell, another Capital City UW professor, they've written Wisconsin Talk, Linguistic Diversity in the Badger State. Turns out, after a couple of weeks ago, I had not had enough, so I called him again. Well, we were introduced the last time we talked to what you do, what a linguist is. I don't remember asking you guys if you remember when you became fascinated with it and elected to pursue it as a career. Who's going first?
I'll let Eric go first on that one. Okay. Well, I made the decision sometime later in my college years. I went to college at the University of Toronto. And I remember when I was picking my classes, I told myself that, you know, one of the things you're supposed to do when you go to college is to expand what you know. And so I was going to pick a class that I had no idea what it was about. I came across Introduction to Linguistics, no idea what it was at all, picked it. And then, you know, by the end of my freshman year, it was the only class that, frankly, held my attention. It was the only one I was still going to. I had to declare a major in my sophomore year, so I declared linguistics and philosophy. I was kind of good at it, and I had some encouragement from different professors and other things. After I graduated there, I took some time off, and then I went to grad school. From there, it's been a long chain of events to where it leads me here now. Found a great job at Madison. Not everybody who's very good and wants to be a linguist is lucky enough to actually find a job.
Sure. Plus, it sounds cool to tell people you're a linguist. I tell people I'm a mediatrician.
Ah, there you go.
And there are people who think that I'm a doctor when I tell them that.
That sounds about right.
Sure. Mediatrics is what I... What's your specialty, Mr. Ross? Mediatrics.
Yeah, it should be Dr. Ross.
Yes. Well, that should be, yes, but I don't go that far.
Yeah, right.
So, Joe, how did... what happened to you?
Well, it was a very different story. I decided in college to major in philosophy, because I wanted to know how thinking worked in a certain sense. I really liked it. And one of the things that you do in philosophy, especially if you're interested in history of philosophy, is you take some languages to be able to read some of the texts and earlier texts in the original languages. I did German and French, and I drove my teachers for 4 years mad by asking, why is it like this? Why does it work this way? Why is English like that and French does this? How come German has this and English doesn't? And I decided that I was going to get a master's in German and go back and do philosophy. I wanted to have really good control of at least one of the languages well enough to work in. And a required course in the MA program was History of the German Language. From, I think, literally the first day in that class, every single session, there were things that I had been wondering about for 4 years that the professor was just sort of casually explaining. Well, so... okay, it works like this in German, and the reason it works like this is because it used to be like this, and this happened, and here's what's going on. It completely changed my life in a pretty literal way, because I didn't know that there were ways to answer these questions, let alone that these ways to answer these questions were so rich and interesting. And by the end of that semester, I decided I was not going back to philosophy, and I was not going to do German. I was going to do linguistics.
You know, and I read that there's a term, the science of language. Scientists. Are you scientists?
Oh, absolutely.
That's good. One word answers are fine on this show. I don't care.
Especially if they're true. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's. I think both of us will absolutely say that, because, I mean, being a scientist doesn't mean that you sit in front of a lab and have a Bunsen burner in front of you all the time. It's that you follow a particular method. Of approaching a subject matter, in that you develop explicit hypotheses, and then you go out and you find particular data to evaluate the hypotheses. It's almost always wrong, so you revise the hypotheses, and that's how you make progress. You get things a little bit less wrong the next time around, and then you go back. Mm-hmm. So all of the things that we do, I can comfortable speaking for all of us, is that absolutely we're doing science. Even a couple years ago, the kids in our lab actually bought lab coats as kind of a joke.
Oh, cool. The book is called Wisconsin Talk, Linguistic Diversity in the Badger State. Eric Ramey and Joe Salmons with us, both educators at UW-Madison. They're 66.666% of the authors of that particular book. Every once in a while, even guys involved in what might be perceived as routine education, and I say that with all due respect, English in general is viewed that way sometimes, although you're more than English teachers, you get something tantamount to upheaval or discovery or breakthrough, something to sink your teeth into. Has that happened within the last few decades with the infusion of Hmong and Hispanic-speaking residents in Wisconsin?
In terms of language in general and linguistics in general, it's happened constantly over recent years, and it's happened in Wisconsin in terms of what we know and also in terms of how Wisconsin is developing linguistically in really dramatic ways. Yeah, new immigrant languages to the state are important, and they're changing what's happening in the state linguistically, and sometimes in ways that are completely invisible to people. Kathy Stafford in the chapter on Spanish in Wisconsin points out something that people are really unaware of, I think, to a large extent in the state. People think, oh, people coming from Central America speak Spanish. And it's true, most of them can speak Spanish, but a whole lot of them speak Spanish as their second, third, fourth language. So what we've got now is a situation of people who are already multilingual coming into Wisconsin, and people are just now getting to understand what it means to have this many new Spanish speakers, and are only starting to become aware of how many other languages there are behind that, how much more is actually going on linguistically in these communities.
I know Native American tribes are working hard to sustain and protect their language after maybe neglecting that preservation or taking it for granted in the past.
It's not so much taking for granted. I mean, the United States government did a huge amount of very active work to stamp out languages. Many, many Native kids were sent to boarding schools. In many cases, residential boarding schools, often long travels from where they grew up. The idea was basically to make them culturally white. They were forbidden to speak their languages, punished, often violently punished for doing it, kept there for years. You think about your, say, first grade through sixth grade, how much you learn about your community, your culture, your language in that time. So you have kids who are away for years, taken out of the culture, forced to speak English for years, and then sent back. So what you've done is basically break the chain of normal transmission. What you have is a generation of people who spoke an indigenous language until they were, say, 6 years old, went a very long time without speaking it, in many cases were so traumatized when they came back that they refused to speak it, refused to use it with other people. So you have this very rapid destruction of linguistic communities. What's amazing, and it really is amazing, is that you've got communities that have tiny numbers of native speakers in them. They've put together immersion schools where kids can come in and be exposed to the language enough that the kids really grow up with a very good command of it. So you're creating native speakers. Of course, those kids are going to be bilingual. They're going to speak English as well as they speak Ho-Chunk or Ojibwe or Potawatomi. But once you do that, then you've got a situation where kids can transmit the language again and the language can become established in the community again.
Let's turn to a little bit more fun stuff here. I know, and I alluded to this last time we talked, that there are words from which people can immediately identify Wisconsinites. Now, we talked about ways of saying words, but there are words, I think, I brought up bubbler last time. We talked about the difference between pop and soda being east and west. Give us some words that just literally belong to Wisconsin.
I'll tell you a weird one that came up in the spring. I'd never thought about this word. I was teaching a class on language and immigration in Wisconsin, and before class, students would always pepper me with questions. A lot of them sort of like your questions, actually, really interesting questions and really relevant to what we were doing. One day before class, this kid says, I just realized my roommate says to unthaw something. Everybody in the class sort of pauses for a second and realizes, oh, wait a minute. You take something out of the freezer, it's frozen, you're thawing it. You're not unthawing it. To unthaw would be to freeze it. I mean, I did what we do. I asked, well, okay, so who uses this? Who knows this? Does it sound funny to you? Mm-hmm. And all of the kids from Wisconsin, not all of them used it, but most of them had heard it. I started asking other people. People from Wisconsin seem to be familiar with it. People from outside seem not to be familiar with it. So this is something completely under the radar screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Little tiny thing, not any broader significance to it, really. But as far as we can tell from just this little sort of accident, this may be a little Wisconsinism.
Where do these words come from? Do they come from just past generations? Do they come from a German word, a Swiss word, a Swedish word that maybe just, you know, evolved into things like bubbler? Of course, bubbler is just, that's what it does.
Bubbler is a trade name.
Is it really?
Yes, it's an actual trade name for a particular brand of water fountain from the Kohler Company.
Ah.
You might have been a little bit disappointed with Joe coming up with, like, the Wisconsin word unthaw, but I think Joe's example is a perfect example of the difficulty of finding, you know, one own word, is that, you know, for the most part, you don't really know what's unique or the same until you actually go across different speech communities.
Yeah.
And so being in Wisconsin, it's kind of hard to figure out what is only ours because you have to go and kind of survey all of the other possible speech communities.
Mm.
And the interesting thing with the bubbler is that there are speech communities in Rhode Island and Australia that also have bubbler in the usage of the Wisconsin thing.
They do.
And the thing that draws them all together is that that was the sales patterns of this particular brand of water fountain made by the Kohler company that was specifically branded the bubbler version as opposed to the jet stream version. And so, you know, the bubbler, you actually get the name from an actual brand name.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like Kleenex.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. That's Eric Ramey, and Joe Selmans is on an extension with him. We're talking to him from Madison about their book, Wisconsin Talk. Okay, I'm just going to dive in real quickly, and my pet peeve revolves around the word that from two angles. People say that rather than who. He's the person that wrote the book. Bob is the one that said you were crazy. The other thing is we use that in sentences where we don't really have to. For instance, I was thinking that I should exercise more. You could say I was thinking I should exercise more rather than, why does that stuff bug me? Should I get help somewhere?
You're about complementizer choice in English subclauses.
It's true.
You are only bothered by one type of that. If you begin to actually pay attention to what's bothering you with this here, the one that you want the substitution for who or which,
yeah,
and then where you can or cannot delete that when another sentence follows, in both of those sentences there is an embedded clause, as we call it. There are different types of embedded clauses. One of the things that determines what type of embedded clause you have is whether a that is required or not. One of the things that you're noticing is that there are some embedded clauses where that is optional. We can find other examples where you cannot leave out the that. What you're noticing is you're noticing that there's an optionality there, and you just have a preference for the that option in those ones.
This is really specific to languages. There are languages where exactly the that you don't want to have in there has to be there. And speakers of those languages, when they learn English, they will tend to use them a lot more. That may be part of what's going on in Wisconsin. People have that tradition. I'm like you in my preference. I tend to prefer the that-less ones. Mm-hmm. Where it's possible, but like Eric says, there are ones where it's required even in English.
It's good to know what my disease is.
I wouldn't call it a disease. We all have our preferences.
What did you call it again?
Complementizer choice in subclauses.
I'm going to have a T-shirt made. This is fun. It is science. I'm picturing a lot of people out there listening going, I didn't know that. That's what this show's all about. Appreciate it, guys.
Happy to do it. All right, thanks a lot. Anytime.
I hope you find that stuff as interesting as I do. If not, then I guess I'm just being selfish with that segment. The book is Wisconsin Talk, readily available at University of Wisconsin Press. Eric Ramey and Joe Selmans. Good guys. On the road ahead, a book about never yet being anyone's boyfriend.
Support for WPR comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, bringing Mayo Clinic care to communities throughout western Wisconsin. Dedicated to providing high-quality health care close to home. Details are at mayoclinichealthsystem.org.
Spectrum West continues on a very nice July day. If you're listening on Friday evening, I hope it's as nice. Spectrum Memo, the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, is featuring the exhibit 9 Local Photographers. It'll be up through August 22nd. The artist reception is July 25th. Also, Thoroughly Modern Millie is playing at the Heidi Friday through Sunday, July 25th through 27th. Details by phone at 726-9000 or online at cvca.net. In the Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center in downtown Eau Claire, it's the High School Art Show. It will be up through August 1. EauClaireArts.com is their website. The Wide Spot Performing Arts Camp is now accepting registrations. It's for students in grades 5 to 10 and will be held August 4th through 8th and 11th through 15th at the PAC in Stockholm. You can find a registration form online at widespotperformingarts.org and click on events. Well, the header on the Stout news release I received read, "No boyfriend, no problem." Good headline idea, because it made me continue.
I discovered a UW student from Spencer, Wisconsin, Stacy Springob. She'd published, self-published, a book titled What I've Learned from Never Having a Boyfriend, a different perspective on a universal feeling. How do you hold yourself back from finding out more about that? Tell me, because you start the book about your family. You know, it appears to me that you have some pretty cool role models in that group. Tell me about them.
I mean, my family has always been very supportive of me. My parents, they never forced me to do something I didn't want to do. And when I was interested in something growing up, they always helped me get involved in it. And so I think that really shaped who I am, because it allowed me to just go after things I was interested in and just kind of get deeper into them and become successful in them. Also, my sister, you know, we're best friends, and we're kind of like twins, even though we're 3 years apart, and we always think the same way, and we look at each other and know what each other's thinking, and so we're also very close creatively in that way. So having that and my parents, it's always been a good balance in my life.
Does that mean that Stacy, even from an early age, maybe saw the world through different kind of glasses than other people did?
She could say it that way. You know, thinking about like whether it's a project and elementary school or my book, it's always kind of like, hey, this is how everyone's doing it. How can I do it? Make it a little bit more interesting or twist it a little way in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like an idea that just popped in my head one day, and I just thought it was an interesting perspective, and it kind of made a lot of things come together for me to realize that maybe this is the way I can help other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought it was an interesting perspective and ran with it.
A lot of times when people have what they think is an epiphany, they think it's a great idea. They sleep on it, and then they wake up the next day and go, eh, maybe not. But this one stayed with you.
Yeah, it did. I gave it time, you know. I didn't rush things. That was kind of, I think, why it was successful for me, was because there was no pressure. You know, there's no deadlines. It's just kind of a side thing I was doing. So just when I had time, I brainstorm it more, and then I began writing and did on my own time, and it was something I looked forward to doing, something I enjoyed, even though I was trying to do it to help other people.
You begin the book in a chapter called Be a Keeper by defining yourself to the reader, and you do it in kind of simple terms. I thought that was kind of cool. I was reading a review of your book, and the reviewer said they liked it because you spoke everybody's language, and it does. It actually feels like you're talking to us. So that first chapter gets that ball rolling.
Yeah, it does. I think that was really important for the book, whether it was a teenager or even, you know, if a parent is reading my book, I just want them to feel like, I get it. I'm a normal person, and,
yeah.
You know, I feel like I've been successful in everything in my life, but this one part of, you know, relationships, and so I don't get it. Why is that? And I just wanted to show people that you're not the only one thinking that if you feel that way or ever have felt that way.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you talk about in one of the chapters is about UW Stout, and the quote you use is, I like it and don't like it. But the problem is you never tell us why you don't like it, although not liking something can be said for almost anything that's not perfect.
The reason I said that is because I was writing it throughout my freshman year of college, and that was not an easy year. It wasn't necessarily always UW Stout that made me frustrated. Sometimes it's just things that every freshman deals with in college, just kind of fitting in and finding your niche. You know, a lot of people, when they go into freshman year of college, they're really excited about their school, and they're like, this is the one for me, and I didn't feel that way right away.
Uh-huh.
It really took me a long time to get used to it because I had an idea of what I wanted to do, but I wasn't exactly sure how to get there, and I wasn't completely trusting that Stout was a place that was going to help me do that. And now that I'm there, I feel more comfort in it, and I've taken advantage of different opportunities, and it's coming together now.
Good for you. We're on the phone with Stacy Springob. She has written a book called What I've Learned from Never Having a Boyfriend, A Different Perspective on a Universal Feeling. How did the book flow for you, and how long did it take you to put the entire manuscript together?
It did kind of flow together. When I was brainstorming, I wrote down, okay, what do I think I've learned? And then with that, I kind of organized what kind of goes together and then what doesn't go together, and then kind of listed my experiences and how that would work with it. And through that, I just worked through it. And as I wrote it, it kind of ended up being the process of my life, I guess, in the last couple years. And so, you know, a couple changes here and there at the end of reorganizing chapters to make things flow better. But, yeah, it was pretty easy to put it all together. I started the rough draft in January 2013, and I was done with the first draft, I think, about May.
Mm-hmm.
And then from then on, it was revising for a lot. It made me realize that, you know, all my thoughts about love and relationships and life really became organized by writing this book. Like, I feel like now when I think about things, mm-hmm. I have a definite answer compared to then. It was kind of like a bunch of floating ideas.
Well, I got to tell you, one guy who must feel great about all this is your dad. I'm the father of daughters, and everything they say about how we worry about our girls' relationships is true. So he must be in seventh heaven. He must be saying, way to go, Stacy.
Yeah, he's proud of it. He kind of think gets a kick out of it, but he thinks it's a big deal that I wrote a book.
You talked about how close you and your sister are. How does she feel about your stance? Is that her stance in life, or are you guys different that way?
Agrees pretty much. Same with me. She was, I think, the first person to revise the book.
Ah.
She is also not had a boyfriend, so she kind of had a similar perspective. I took that in consideration revising. I had numerous people, different life paths revised. But yeah, she really agrees with it, and she's always, what I love about her, she's so honest with me,
mm-hmm.
and I always trust her because if it's bad, she'll tell me. Made me feel a little bit more secure, and also because she was in high school and right when I was writing it and everything, I knew that it would reach that audience well.
Before people get the idea that, you know, this is just a how-to book, it's really not. Mm-hmm. I mean, you relate a lot of
right.
things. You talk about dating people.
Right, that's the thing. I've come close to being in a relationship, but it just has not happened.
Sure.
I've never gotten to the will you be my girlfriend part. And so, yeah, I've met some people who are really great and didn't work out, and some people who I'm glad we didn't end up together. I'm usually good at figuring out who's, like, stay away from him, but I mean, I've still fallen for guys like that, just, you know, just with a mask. And they seem like a good person, and, I mean, it just happens. And
mm-hmm.
so I hope people see that and, you know, understand that, yeah, she has been there and seen different sides of people and is relatable to my situation.
We don't want to give the book away. When people get done and they close the back cover, they will say, oh, so that's what Stacy's learned from never having a boyfriend. Yeah. But you know, Stacy, to be honest, part of your success, and I'm sure you've thought about this, is that you haven't met or fallen for the right guy, that soulmate, as they're often called. What if tomorrow he came along and the process began and you knew it straight away? Could you let it happen? I mean, right now, you are the book. I mean, if Mr. Wright sashayed into your life, your book would be toast. Or at least you'd
yeah,
have to.
No, I totally agree. You know, I always thought about that, writing it. But what if I'm in the middle of writing this rough draft and I meet somebody? And I talked to my friends about it, and they said, you know what? If you do, great. Who cares? Like, people aren't going to be
sure.
like, oh, my God, she's a fraud. You know, it's a part of life. And I think I really feel, even when I do meet somebody, that these things will still remain true. Who knows, maybe a couple of things will change, but I think that's life and
mm-hmm.
not the process of learning. And I think I say that many times in the book. And I would definitely tell my fans when I've been in a relationship, I will never
be
quiet about that, because I think they're kind of involved on that journey now. So I want to let them know if it happens.
Well, yes. I mean, you've been very honest with people in this book. Why would you stop being honest? That's Stacy's M.O. there. That's what people look to Stacy for, is honesty. You've laid the groundwork for yourself. And you know what? I think this book is successful, even if, as I said, tomorrow, you know, he comes along and people go, there's no reason to read the book now. The reason the book is so good and makes sense is because what you've done is you've given people the right perspective on relationships, and that is that sometimes you make them way too big a deal, or having one way too big a deal than it really is. You just got to live every day to the fullest.
Right. Yeah, it's really important for me to, I mean, my main idea with the book is, because I target it to teenagers and people my age more, mm-hmm. is that I just want people to realize, go take time to learn about who you are before you invest all this time into a relationship. Many people who just, I'm in love and it's like, I'm going to get 20 or married and I'm 20, you know, and it's like, sometimes that works, but a lot of times it doesn't. And it's important to know who you are even when you're in a relationship, because you don't want to depend so much on somebody.
Sure. You do realize there are guys in frat houses now who are mounting a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to say, nah, see, I saw that book, and I'm going to be her boyfriend. I'm going to break that spell.
Yeah. I really believe that whoever I meet, they will understand why I wrote it. They'll get it. that.
Well, it's not only fun. It does say a lot. For instance, you have a quote in the book that says, "I don't know where I'm going in this life, but I will always have something important to say." And you know what? I believe that, Stacy.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time with us and for being with us here on Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll be looking for more good stuff from Stacy Springob over the years.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me.
Stacy Springob, the book is What I've Learned from Never Having a Boyfriend. It's available at Amazon.com in both print and Kindle form. Here's what's on stage in area theater venues. The musical Footloose is playing at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake through July 19th. The Eau Claire Children's Theater production of the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee will play through Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. A Guy Named Tom, an original musical written by Barron High School graduate Corinne Schultz, will be staged by the Barron Spotlighters tonight, Thursday through Saturday at the Barron Area Community Center. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present Babe the Sheep Pig Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Menominee Theater Guild summer stage program will present Snow White tonight, Thursday through Saturday at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. At the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona, the Merry Wives of Windsor will play tonight, Thursday, and Saturday and Sunday evenings. Hamlet will play Friday afternoon, Saturday evening, and Sunday afternoon. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead will play Friday evening and Tuesday evening. At Love and Feelin', A Story of the Righteous Brothers will play Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show will play Fridays and Saturdays and selected Sundays through August 9th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver. Yes, you are. Thanks. Monday on the West Side, Rich Kramer welcomes Dave Carlson and Joe Knight to discuss how the late spring impacted spawning and fishing in Wisconsin and whether or not the harsh winter helped up the number of mosquitoes and ticks. Something gave them a boost. That's Monday, 10 a.m. on Ideas Network stations in western Wisconsin. And of course, that music signifies that we're done for today. I want to tell you about next week. The Flyway Film Festival hits another gear and reveals a new venue. We'll be talking about that. The World Flute Society convention is coming to Eau Claire, and we'll talk with an icon and hear some music. We'll roll out the red carpet for some young African students attending a business and entrepreneurial institute in Menominee, and more. Yes, say it with me, always more on Spectrum West. My name is Al Ross. Thanks to everybody who helps put this show together on a weekly and a daily basis. It's always fun, and it'll be fun again next week or Friday if you're listening Friday evening. Thanks, everybody.